Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin and go to Moscow to speak with Simon Schuster, who covers Russia for Time magazine, Reuters, and the Associated Press, and has an article at Time, Snowden in Moscow, What Russian Authorities Might Be Doing with the NSA Whistleblower. We will discuss the widely held belief among Russian intelligence sources that since his arrival in Moscow 3 weeks ago, Snowden has been held in a former KGB dacha or country home. Then we'll look into a new poll by Quinnipiac that finds a massive shift in public opinion against government surveillance following the revelations by Edward Snowden. Peter Brown, the assistant director of the Quinnipiac polls, joins us to discuss the change from 2010 when by a 63-25 margin the public felt the government was not doing enough in restricting civil liberties in the name of anti-terrorism, to today where the public feels the government is going too far by a margin of 45-40. Then we'll get an update on Texas Governor Perry and his sister, Mila Perry Jones, who is a lobbyist for United Surgical Partners that run hospitals and surgical centers co-owned by doctors. Her clients are poised to make a windfall when the Texas Senate passes a restrictive anti-abortion bill tomorrow, effectively shutting down the state's abortion clinics and forcing women to go to the much more expensive surgical centers Governor Perry's sister represents. Veteran Texas political reporter James Moore, the author of Adios Mofo, Why Rick Perry Will Make America Miss George W. Bush, joins us to discuss the Perry family's double blessing of piety and profits. Then finally, we will speak with Frederick Rich, the author of a new book just out, Christian Nation, that portrays an America that the religious right envisions, one that would have come to pass had John McCain become president in 2008 and died shortly thereafter, making Sarah Palin president of the United States. We'll discuss this very plausible scenario of a Christian fascist takeover of America that is not unlike what is going, that is now underway in Texas and North Carolina. And joining us now from Moscow is Simon Schuster, who's a reporter based in Moscow. He has covered news out of Russia and the former Soviet Union for Time magazine, Reuters, the Associated Press, the Moscow Times, and has contributed stories to foreign policy. His latest article at Time magazine is Snowden in Moscow, What Russian Authorities Might Be Doing with the NSA Whistleblower. Welcome to Background Briefing, Simon Schuster.
Thanks so much for having me.
And you, in your article, you state that the accepted wisdom, unofficially acknowledged by most Western and Russian sources, is that Snowden was taken soon after his arrival, if not immediately when he got to Moscow airport, to a secure location run by some arm of the Russian government, presumably the SVR Foreign Intelligence. So that's what your reporting has from talking to former and current intelligence officials in Moscow and abroad.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, the people I quote in the article are former Russian intelligence agents. But really, the news that Snowden has not been at the airport, as we've been led to believe, has pretty much been the worst-kept secret in Moscow for a while now. It's just no one has any proof of where he is, actually. But various sources, some of which I can't name or identify, have been saying quite clearly that, yeah, obviously he is not at the airport. He is not sitting, you know, among the fifth-back chairs and eating the cafeteria food at Sheremetyevo to the airport. He has been taken to a secure location by the Russian government. And basically with that story, I just wanted to find a way to get that out to the public. And I think the most interesting way to do that was by talking to former intelligence officials, intelligence agents who could talk about the way it would have been done in the heyday of the KGB. And little has changed, as it turns out.
Well, but one of the people that you quote is not so much a former, he's certainly well-connected, and that's Vladimir Rubanov, who headed the KGB's analytical directorate from 1991 to 1992, after which he served for 3 years as deputy head of the Russian Security Council. And he is somebody that's closely connected to the SVR, the current incarnation of the KGB. And he's quoted in your article saying, "It is a fool who has the chance to get information and misses it." And that seems to me to be fairly logical, that even if Edward Snowden is a very idealistic and principled whistleblower, he's dealing with some incredibly tough customers, and it's their job to take what he has. It's not a question of him handing over stuff, surely. It's a question of them taking it. Isn't that how the real world works?
Well, that we don't know. But what Rabada was saying, I mean, he was quite coy. He was the official I quoted who was closer than the others that I quoted. And to be specific, there are sort of other sources that I did not name who are closest to the security services. He was quite coy in saying that, you know, to be honest, we have methods of getting this information without, you know, using the force or anything like that, just by sort of talking to him, just by charming him. And I don't know, his position was that we wouldn't need to turn to any kind of extraordinary measures to get him to talk, because he is in fairly dire straits. I mean, he's in need of a friend. He's in need of asylum and political support and diplomatic cover and documents, because his American passport has been annulled. So his point was that, you know, of course, he's carrying very interesting information that the Russian security services would be quite curious about. He was the one who said that it would not be necessary to use any kind of extraordinary means to get that information. That's his opinion. I don't know what the real situation is, and nobody really does. I mean, that's the thing. A lot of this is speculation and conjecture, and even the sources that I do quote in the story, they are talking about what would be done, what could be done from the perspective of the security services.
Again, I'm speaking with Simon Schuster, who is in Moscow. He's a reporter who is based there and has covered news out of Russia and the former Soviet Union for Time magazine, Reuters, the Associated Press, the Moscow Times, and has contributed articles to foreign policy. His latest article at Time magazine is Snowden in Moscow, What Russian Authorities Might Be Doing with the NSA Whistleblower. And you've talked also to Russian hackers, the editor of their hacker magazine, about the assumption. In fact, Glenn Greenwald has confirmed that Edward Snowden encrypted a lot of his files, although it's worth noting that he gave files to, at least as far as we know, to Glenn Greenwald, to The Washington Post, to The Guardian, and to WikiLeaks. So those unencrypted files do exist and are probably vulnerable. But the ones that he encrypted, the questions are whether or not they would be able to get the encryption keys out of him. And I take it that one of the people you talked to, you were just mentioning earlier, they didn't seem to think that they'd have to resort to some of the sophisticated drugs that they used on a former double agent who you also talked with, Oleg Gordievsky, who was subjected to a KGB-developed drug called SP-117, where he says it turned out the lights and made me start talking in a very animated way. And at the end of the day, he wakes up and he doesn't know what he's told them. So I guess, well, what's your understanding of what's possibly going on here with the idea that he has files that are encrypted and therefore has some bargaining leverage, if you will?
I mean, the first point is the one that you made initially, that Snowden is a fairly sophisticated computer expert in his own right. He has hacking experience. So any data that he did take from the National Security Agency, we can fairly safely assume that he encrypted it and likely put it into some kind of a cloud, right? So remotely stored it. So in order to access that information, according to the computer experts and hackers that I talked to in Russia, they say that, yes, there are technologies available quite widely. You or I could purchase them that would encrypt and remotely store data in a way that would make it inaccessible to even the Russian security services if they got their hands on, for example, a laptop that Edward Snowden would be carrying. So, yes, they could physically take the laptop, but they would not be able to access the data on it because of the advanced encryption and data storage technologies that he would have access to. So then they would need Snowden or someone else who has the encryption keys and the passwords to the remote data storage services to hand over basically those passwords. And how do you make someone do that? The insights that I got for the story about that were from, indeed, a former double agent who was called back. He was serving as a spy in the London embassy for the Soviet Union. He was a colonel of the KGB. And he was called back in 1985 by the KGB, who became suspicious that he was a double agent, and they wanted to interrogate him. And he was called to a basically, you know, a regular house, a dacha, a country estate outside of Moscow, and his commanders acted as if nothing at all was wrong. They actually told him that he was about to receive a promotion and an award for his service, and then they gave him a substance. We don't actually know if it was SP-117. All that I say in the article is that is one of the substances that the KGB was using at the time for those purposes, usually in order to test its agents to see if they were possibly lying or becoming disloyal. So essentially you slip this into someone's food or drink and they, become intoxicated. And they start saying things that they wouldn't otherwise. And the next day when the effects of the substance wears off, they don't remember what was said, the nature of the conversations that took place. So this double agent who I talked to, he now lives in the UK. He believes that Snowden, most likely in order to get those encryption keys and passwords, could have been given a substance like that if he did not give them up voluntarily.
Well, of course, Oleg Gordievsky was, the reason he was recalled was that when Aldrich Ames, the American spy, traitor, if you will, in order to establish his bona fides, when he showed up at the Russian embassy, he gave them Gordievsky's name as this incredibly valuable double agent. And Kryuchkov, the head of the KGB's Foreign Intelligence Service at the time, had a dilemma. He wanted to arrest Gordievsky, but he didn't want the trail to go back to Ames because Ames was the most valuable thing they had. So they had to build a case against him without it in any way having Aldrich Ames's fingerprints on it. So that was the dilemma that they had at the time. And of course, he made this dramatic exfiltration from Russia, which
is right. You've clearly done your homework on the history of Russian spies. That's right. It wasn't clear why the KGB did not immediately arrest Gordievsky after he, exposed himself, compromised himself under the influence of this substance that he says he was given, fed. It's not clear why they didn't arrest him. They simply put him under intense surveillance, which he then managed to shake and escape from Russia in the trunk of a British diplomat's car.
But already, the point I was making is that as much as he may have encrypted files with him, and he says he has, he's also given them to Glenn Greenwald, the Washington Post, and the Guardian, and also to WikiLeaks, who seem to be handling his travel arrangements, if you will. And Glenn Greenwald told the Daily Beast that if anything happens to Snowden, the stories will inevitably be published. So that indicates that these files are, in fact, already beyond Snowden's control.
That's a question that came up in the comments to the article today. How do we know that Snowden even has access to the files that he stole from the NSA? We really don't know. I suppose it's possible that he simply entrusted all of them to Glenn Greenwald and Julian Assange and the folks at WikiLeaks and basically came to Russia empty-handed. That's really a matter of conjecture and speculation. Nobody knows for sure. That's possible that happened. But, my feeling is he probably left himself a set of keys as well. So, I'd be really surprised if he did not leave himself access to the files that worked so hard to get and has essentially changed his life and sacrificed his life to reveal to the public.
Well, of course, he himself, Snowden, in a more recent interview with Glenn Greenwald, or at least one that was more recently released, said, "I never gave any information to either Russia or China, and they never took anything from my laptops." But, of course, we haven't heard from Snowden for 3 weeks, and nobody knows where he is. And you're saying that it's the worst kept secret in Moscow, that he's basically in an SVR KGB dacha?
We don't know who's Dutch or where he is. Essentially, for the first week or so, there was pretty much every journalist in town went over to Sheremetyevo Airport. And, I mean, journalists have been prowling the place for weeks now, searching every inch of it. Journalists have been buying tickets to foreign countries, usually Ukraine or Armenia, in order to access the international transit zone, have spent weeks looking for him, questioning everyone from airline officials to airport officials. There is no photograph of him at the airport. There is no sign that he was ever there. So from that and sources that I can identify, saying that, yes, you know, obviously he did not simply, you know, sit down at a cafe and plug in his laptop at the power outlet and, you know, plug in the local airport Wi-Fi connection and continue doing his work. Yes, you know, various sources have been saying that he was taken pretty much immediately to a place where he could be comfortable, that is run by some arm of the Russian government. We don't know which one it is. We don't know which security agency, or, you know, it could even be, actually, Rubanov said this. I didn't get this into the story. He said that actually the security services have facilities in the airport. So, you know, there could be a room or a suite or an apartment in the airport where he would be allowed to kind of relax and take it easy and have access to the internet and various kind of technological things that he might need. But the point is that the idea that he is stranded in the transit zone, as we have been told by the Russian government for 3 weeks now, is pretty silly. He's clearly not sitting around in the transit zone with the other passengers.
Well, indeed, the former KGB top spy in Washington, General Oleg Kalugin, recently told me about that facility they have at the airport and basically said that the KGB completely control that part of the airport. But when I first, when he first got to Moscow, I spoke with Pavel Felgenhauer, defense and intelligence analyst who writes for Novaya Gazeta. And I asked him about the possibility. I said, you know, surely the KGB, SVR's job is to get this stuff. That's what they do, as is the case with the Chinese. You know, in fact, in the case of the Chinese, they had every reason to arrest Snowden when he arrived there because he was working for an agency that targets them. So that's just the way the game is played. But Felgenhauer said, no, they said even if they got the material he has with him, they would need time to debrief him, and maybe 2 or 3 weeks. So, and that seems to be the time frame that we're talking about here. Does that make sense to you?
I mean, it depends on the circumstances of you know, what they want and how cooperative he is. If he's not cooperative at all, then it would take years for them to crack the encryption codes, according to the hackers I spoke to in Moscow. It would take years to access that data. You know, so we don't know. At the end, Gordievsky, the double agent who was outed in 1985, or rather outed himself under the influence of this drug, he said that there's 3 weeks is pretty much enough time. So he felt confident that whatever the Russian security services would have wanted to get from Snowden, they would have already had enough time to get it. He said that seems to jibe with the ease with which Vladimir Putin and other government officials are basically saying, all right, you know, you can go now. We don't really need you anymore. You know, as soon as you have a flight out, go ahead and take it. But again, we really don't know what, if anything, the Russian security services were seeking and how easily, if at all, they were able to get it.
Well, just in closing, Simon Schuster, President Obama, of course, has a trip planned to Russia in September, and I imagine that it's highly unlikely that the president would go to Russia if Snowden was still there. So I take it there's no likelihood of him ever seeking asylum. For a while there, he did apply for asylum to Russia along with a lot of other countries. And that was, of course, shortly after Julian Assange said, apropos what you were saying earlier about this place at the airport, the only thing that was ever said about Snowden's whereabouts was by Julian Assange, who said he was in a safe place and he was comfortable. But it's pretty clear, isn't it, that this would be a deal breaker in terms of Obama's trip. And when Putin recently said that Snowden could stay in Russia as long as he didn't keep hurting our American partners, as strange as that may seem coming from my lips. So just in closing, what's your reading on how much this has affected the already somewhat prickly relations between the two countries?
I mean, that's a very interesting point. And I think it's important to remember that the Russian government is a multi-headed beast. I mean, there are some former security officials who hold the opinion that all decisions are made by the security services. Putin is, of course, a former agent of both KGB and its modern incarnation, the FSB. And a lot of people will tell you that all decisions, be they foreign policy, domestic policy, you know, education policy, are in one way or another made by the security services. I think that's a bit of an exaggeration. Political considerations, you know, the Kremlin, the presidential administration, they have their say, and they do have an interest in preserving some appearance of this reset in U.S.-Russian relations, some civility in that relationship. So they do not want to treat the Snowden situation in such a way that would really spoil that relationship, that would prevent Obama from visiting Russia in September, as you said. So there's a balance that they're trying to strike between the interests of the various groups, clans, that really control Russia. So, yes, the security services want to get the information that Snowden has. That's you know, pretty obvious. However, the foreign ministry and possibly, you know, various Putin advisors, various people in the presidential administration, they want to be careful about not annoying the United States too much. So they're trying to strike this balance. And so far, they seem to be doing that quite well. I think when we do, and hopefully we do hear eventually from Snowden himself, what he says about his experience in Russia could shed some light on what actually happened and might change our perceptions of Russia's actions when he actually arrived in Moscow in June.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Simon Schuster.
Thank you so much.
Again, I've been speaking with Simon Schuster, who's in Moscow, where he's a reporter based there. He has covered news out of Russia and the former Soviet Union for Time magazine, Reuters, the Associated Press, the Moscow Times, and has contributed stories to foreign policy. His latest article at Time magazine is Snowden in Moscow, What Russian Authorities Might Be Doing with the NSA Whistleblower. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with a pollster about a recent poll indicating a massive swing in America against the National Security Agency.